The O'Neill by Thomas Kilroy opened last night at Ingenon Theatre in Letterkenny. The play is part of the Airlie Arts Festival, which also marks the 400th anniversary of the Flight of the Earls. It traces the events from the Battle of the Yellow Ford through to the Battle of Kinsale. Last Friday we spoke to writer Thomas Kilroy and the director David Grant. I'm now joined by writer and broadcaster Frank Galligan, who went to see the play. Frank, you're very welcome to the 11th Hour.
Thank you very much indeed, Páraic. And I heard Thomas Kilroy saying there in that clip of the interview about he was interested in the full range. And I think that's what comes across in this particular production.
What's the basic story of the O'Neill, please, Frank?
Well, the basic story in this particular O'Neill is that, as you say, it begins at the Battle of the Yellow Ford. It also concentrates on the relationship between O'Neill and the English, and the fact that he was educated and brought up to some extent in England, the tension between his Irishness and his Englishness. I suppose when I say the clash of cultures between Ireland and England, Páraic, what is interesting in it is what they use by way of props on stage. For example, the English, Mountjoy and Cecil, are portrayed wearing stockbroker suits, red braces, using laptops and mobile phones, while the Irish are in their animal skins and holding their swords. So that's the contrast that hits you immediately on stage.
How does that work, this idea of contemporizing one half of the cast and the other cast back in the 15th century?
Well, actually, I thought that's what did work, and it worked best for me, because what interested me about this particular production, Páraic, was that I found that the reason I enjoyed the play was because of the peripheral characters, particularly the three spies whose performances were absolutely fantastic and said more about the state and the confusion of Ireland than anything else. Also, Mabel Bagnall, who married O'Neill and who wants to remain English within the tensions of Tyrone, exemplified more about that tension between Ireland and England than O'Neill did himself. And it ended up, quite honestly, I thought he was quite a peripheral character in this, and that I don't know how deliberate that was on Kilroy's part, but for me it worked, because when you're royal or when you're a king, I mean, it's the acolytes, it's all the yes men really who make the decision.
Well, it's the myth that's created by acolytes as well.
It is, and I suppose I was thinking of what Brian Friel said in Making History about O'Neill in Exile, where he called him, you know, the schemer, the leader, the liar, the statesman, the lecher, the patriot. Now, in the course of the 2 hours of this particular production, all of those personalities don't come to the fore. You know, there are bits and pieces of them, but it's through the people around him, through Cormac and through Art and through actually his mistress and the talk about relationships and through Mabel Bagnall that we find out a wee bit more about Ireland and maybe what Kilroy was trying to do overall, rather than concentrating on the man himself. And my problem, if I have a problem with this particular production of the O'Neill, is that I felt he should be like Henry VIII. He should be a man of great girth and size and bellowing. Andrew Roddy is a very, very fine actor, but he's rather slight in this. And you know,
in fairness, the O'Neill was a fairly small class of a man, though, wasn't he?
Oh, yes, absolutely. But what I'm saying is that In dramatic terms, yes. He needed to fill the stage a wee bit more for me. But maybe that's why it worked, as I say. The three spies in particular, one of them is the Anglo-Irish politician. The other is the Irish man, cliched, who will do anything for a drop of drink. The third guy, fantastic performance by Owen McGill of Regis, Teddy Mahon, is the Gombin man, who doesn't really care who wins as long as the wee shop that he owns keeps selling provisions. They got a great audience reaction, a fantastic one indeed.
But going back to Bagnall, his wife, she was the sister of Henry Bagnall.
That's right.
The guy he defeated at Yellow Ford. Was there any tension there? God, it can't be good fun for her to go and base up the brother-in-law still hang out with the missus, can it?
Yes, in fact, one of the better scenes is where O'Neill's mistress gets rather drunk at a banquet and starts slagging off the English, and Mabel Bagnall, played very, very well by April Robinson, takes them all on, and O'Neill doesn't stand up for her, and she gets very upset about this, and there's an incredible tension there, because eventually everybody turns on Mabel Bagnall, not because she's O'Neill's wife, but because she's English and what she represents. So the tension is quite palpable there.
But O'Neill, he was married to Bagnall, who was of Protestant stock from Newry. He had several mistresses, but he supported the Franciscans in Donegal, and he sided with the king of the Catholic king of Spain against his Protestant, the Protestant English. Was O'Neill an immoral man, and did this play deal with that?
Well, I'm reminded of what Sean O'Freeland said in his book, The Great O'Neill Porrick. He said that O'Neill realised the absolute necessity of conforming swiftly to the trend of world affairs, or of going under. So in many ways, he was our first Teflon Taoiseach, you know. He was quite a movable feast in all of this. And he attended his Protestant services, and yet in 1599 at Dungannon, he's saying, I won't be king if I can't be a Catholic king, and all heresy and schism be expelled from Ireland. But the problem with the O'Neill that I saw on stage tonight is that I couldn't see all of those complexities in the man on the stage. I was learning bits and pieces from those around him. And it's like earlier on today watching Alistair Campbell being interviewed about his memoirs and finding out more about Tony Blair through Campbell than finding it through Blair himself. And that's really how that production worked tonight.
Well,
I don't know.
Very hard to put a whole, like Thomas Kilroy was here last week and he was talking about the great O'Neill was a big, Fáilán O'Neill was a great influence. It was very hard to turn a book into a play too. But anyway, he was saying that the reason why he wrote the play in 1966 was because the politics of the time, we were all talking about joining Europe. Let's hear what he's got to say about those influences.
It came very much out of the kind of debate at the time about Ireland moving into Europe. At that point, a lot of the emphasis was upon the European Economic Community. You know, upon business and economic development, and the kind of cultural aspect was kind of missing to some extent out of the debate. And I thought that O'Neill would be a terrific subject to dramatise the full range of the notion of Ireland in Europe, set against a particular historical moment.
Well, O'Neill, of course, from Dungannon, but O'Donnell was from Tyrconnell or Donegal. And Donegal still feels a little bit left out from the economic well-being of the Celtic Tiger in this country. Has there been an isolation in Ulster since O'Neill's time?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because at one stage, Mountjoy, when he's getting the submission at Mellifont of O'Neill, says, you know, of the Irish situation, he says it's over, and the audience all laugh because we know that in 1599 or 1601 it certainly is not. And as regards, it's interesting you mentioned Donegal. Of course, I'm being a Donegal man myself. I'm reminded of one of your colleagues in RT years ago interviewing a very wise man in Donegal at the time. There was about three elections in the early 1980s when Charlie Haughey was Taoiseach Porrick.
Mr. O'Neill, of course.
And yeah, absolutely. And when asked about the complexities of the Irish political situation, he said, always remember this, Cutty. That's how he addressed the girl, very politically correct. I'm sure she loved it. Always remember this, Cutty, that Ireland isn't divided into two, it's divided into three. There's 25 counties, and then there's the six counties, and then there's Donegal. And I'm happier, he says, in this quarter. And I think that sums up Irish history beautifully.
Well, everybody's happy in their own quarter. But there is a kind of a national sadness when you mention the O'Neill and the O'Donnell and the 9 Years' War and how we lost the chance. And that sadness probably felt more in Donegal because the castles and the monuments and the are still there. And the names, the Sweeties and the O'Neills and the O'Donnells are still there, of course.
Yes, and there is a sadness towards the end of this particular production as well, particularly after the submission of O'Neill, when he kind of breaks down for the first time, because he does hold himself together, certainly in the production, during the course of the few hours. But we know in the audience about the inevitability and of Kinsale. But in terms of Donegal, I mean, I've lived in Northern Ireland for over 20 years or so, Porrick, and it's an interesting thing for somebody coming from Donegal in there, because you refer to as somebody from, quote, the Free State and somebody from the South. And yet a Donegal person like myself is most comfortable being a Northerner, a Westerner, a Northwesterner. So it's other people's perceptions of us that give us a giggle. Kind of we're laid back about it all, to tell you the truth.
But going back to the coloniser, the 9 Years' War, of course, precipitated the plantation of Ulster. Well, it had already begun, but they fairly finished it off after they got rid of O'Neill. Was that tension between the ancient Irish and the new non-Irish, was that examined in the play?
Well, you got a sense of it, particularly because of organisation. Lord Cecil, another fantastic performance in this. In fact, one of the real strengths by Sean McCormick's Robert Cecil, who's on stage quite a bit dressed in a stockbroker suit, and he talks about, you know, the organisation of the English, the planning. And he puts so much emphasis on that you can see the very, very stark dichotomy. Now, he's obviously been quite xenophobic and racist in some way about all of this. I suppose what struck me particularly, you mentioned there, it was written in 1966. I think it was Tom's first stage play, but it was first put on in the Peacock, wasn't it, in 1969?
That's right, yeah.
And that's the year that the Troubles are kicking in the North. And I was just struck by what somebody in the audience said to me this evening, picking up on that point. I wonder how the audience reacted then, because one of the features of the play is some of the lines like, you know, what call had you coming here thinking to change us? We have our ways, our laws, our language. The same as the English, and we're proud of them. And yet another quote is, history, in time, history will not be able to tell the difference between us. And you're asking about Donegal. There is a perception perhaps up here in the Northwest that further down through the island of Ireland, in what was the Pale, and in many people's estimation is becoming paler day by day, that there's very, very little difference perhaps between us, but we're still hanging on up here.
But of course, like... The Donegal phenomenon of being ignored by the rest of the country gives it a certain edge. Did you get that edge off the play that O'Neill was isolated, he knew he was isolated, or did he always look across the sea to Spain where he thought he had great allies?
Well, really, where any ambivalence comes in relationships is not so much to do with Spain, I found, and it's to do with his relationship with Queen Elizabeth, because they keep the fact of her death from him at the end of the play. And you get this whole business of, you know, that she's very angry with him, but in a way, did she love him? And he keeps saying Mountjoy before he has to prostrate himself and go on his knees and submit, you know, what the Queen thinks of me. And do you realise, Mountjoy, you know, that she and I have kind of whispered in each other's ears? So therein lies the tension, really, that in many ways he does feel some type of allegiance to the place that fostered him and educated him and whatever. But now, as an Ulster man, he begs Mountjoy to let him go back to his own people, not necessarily to be a leader. That's what I'm saying is quite sad at the end, because he ends up literally with his tail between his legs.
Well, of course, we always thought that if Elizabeth had lived, she would have pardoned him totally.
Yeah, and you do get the sense of that from some of what Mountjoy says at the very end as he's taking the submission at Mellifont. He and Cecil conspire, or Cecil actually says, do not tell him that the Queen is dead, because obviously that might have changed O'Neill's demeanour. It might have given him...
He mightn't have gone for it.
He mightn't have gone for it, no, not at all. And in terms of the overall sadness that you were alluding to earlier on, Porrick, I happened to be down in Rathmullen and Remelton for some time ago doing voiceovers for different aspects of the Flight of the Earls, and just standing in a particular spot where they would have left. That day was the first day that palpably, I suppose, I felt some sense of an extraordinary time 400 years ago in our history, an extraordinary time where everything changed, all changed and changed utterly, and never ever to be the same again. And I think it's in this play in particular when, as I say, Mountjoy looks out at us and says, it's over. We laughed. And it probably got one of the better laughs, because we know it certainly wasn't then, and hopefully it is now-ish.
That's quite extraordinary. But a good production to commemorate the 400 year of the Flight of the Earls, and a good production as a centrepiece, the Errigal Arts Festival, you would say.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, I must say I enjoyed it. A fantastic audience reaction and a lot of complexities. I suppose, talking about Tom Kilroy, finally, I was more reminded of Double Cross. You know, Tom's quite interested in all of that whole
in the
business.
English and Irish debate. Like,
yes, very, very much so. And I was thinking
Lord Aha and the, what was the private secretary.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
Wilson Churchill.
Very much so. I was thinking of that more than I was perhaps of making history, because I suppose Brian was more interested in, somebody said, the philosophical aspect of the history itself rather than
the actual mechanics. Just one question for Olivia. There was a musical accompaniment to the play. How did that work?
I enjoyed that because it was the Henry girls, the McLaughlins from Annishone, who are fantastic musicians, and people will remember them from a previous Eurovision or whatever. But that being said, their evocation of Roisin Dhu, as we'd say, or Roisin Dhuv, as you'd say in the West.
In the West, of course.
Yes, was absolutely beautiful. And I thought it was particularly evocative because that was written as a harp piece in the 16th century in praise of Red Hugh O'Donnell. So, yeah, that was good. Music overall, I enjoyed, I must say.
Well done. Thanks very much, Frank Galligan, for reviewing the O'Neill for us, written by Thomas Kilroy and directed by David Grant.